In today's episode of the Motorhome Matt podcast,
we're unpacking how more and more campsites are introducing pay-as-you-go electric meters.
In the news, we've sparked an argument around the topic of license changes that we covered just a couple of weeks ago.
And we've been inundated with great comments after my recent heart issues.
Welcome to the Motorhome Matt podcast. I'm Keith Gooden.
And I'm Motorhome Matt.
Industry insights, expert advice for the world of motorhomes, caravans and camper vans. Brought to you by thatleisureshop.com.
And please, we always say it, remember to follow on your favourite podcast app. And hit subscribe and the little bell on YouTube. Brought to you by arabasecreative.co.uk.
So what are we talking about today then, Matt?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed David Whitehead from the NCC about the licence changes that could be coming here in the UK. It's called the Fourth Directive on Driving Licences. It's a European directive that's under review in the EU at the moment. And we were given the impression that because of the B plus E restriction being lifted...
Look at the back of your driving licence if you want to know what he's talking about.
There you are. Yeah. So we were given the impression that because that had been lifted here in the UK, so someone who now passes their test today, actually since December 2021, the B plus E test was abolished. So you can now pass your driving test and tow a big caravan and drive a big car. In fact, a train weight of up to 7 tonnes. And we were given the impression that would not be recognised in Europe, in France and in Northern Ireland. And it sparks a bit of a debate. And so I decided to go and seek some advice on this. And I asked Fliss, the trailer lady, as she's known, for her comment. Can I tow my caravan that means I can be a 7-ton train weight in France?
Yes. I have done my research because I watched that particular episode. I actually rang the DVLA to ask them, who wouldn't comment, can't comment on anything outside the UK. Yeah, I did get through. It's quite good. When you say you're a driving instructor, they're actually quite helpful to you and they do talk to you. They couldn't comment on driving outside the UK. But I have since been delving onto the Gov website and it states on there what to do if you're in the EU driving. So you need your UK stickers, your triangles, all those kind of things. You need to be aware of the speed limits and the drink drive laws, all of those things. But it does say, and I have got it up here, so that's why I'm looking at my screen here. Towing your trailer or caravan abroad. So before towing your trailer abroad, check if you need to get the category BE added to your license. So this is a key thing. If you're one of the people that has been gifted the B plus E, so you've got a Christmas present in 2021 from the government, 16th of December it came in, you have been gifted it. So when you do a view my driving license on the Gov website, it comes up and it shows that you have B&E, but it might not necessarily be on your photo card. So if you are planning to go into Europe, you need to fill out, and it says it on here, the D1 application form and send it to the DVLA to get your license updated to have the B&E actually on the photo card. If it's due for renewal very shortly or you're changing your name or you're moving house, it will come back automatically through that process. But if that's not going to happen before you want to go into Europe, then you need to fill out the D1 and get it updated. And you just pop a letter with it to say that you're planning on traveling abroad and then they will update it for you. If you're towing a commercial trailer, you may need to register that trailer to take it into Europe. For the scenarios we're talking about, that's not applicable. So if you are on holiday and you're towing a caravan or you're in a motorhome towing a trailer with motorbikes in it, for example, then that is not applicable to you. So from what I've read, to me, yes, you can tow abroad. Because in theory, your driving license as a tourist is valid anywhere. You can drive in America. You can drive in Japan. There's a couple in a motorhome going around Malaysia and all over that way at the moment on their UK licenses because they're tourists. They're on holiday. If you choose to live and then drive in a country, then the rules are different. And yes, you would then have to upgrade your license and you would then have to conform to the local rules for that country. But we're not. We're on holiday. The maximum we can do is 90 days. We are tourists. And I'm going to stick my neck out here and I'm going to say that with regards to sort of the old common use regulations and even the Gov website, it will always tell you what you should be doing. And if it doesn't specifically say don't do it, then you're fine, if that makes sense. So if it's not written down in black and white, as far as I'm concerned, you can tow on the continent. And I would be interested to know, because I've been spoken to about this issue, and I've been told that the B&E is not being recognised in Europe. Where is that written down? If I'm wrong, I'll hold my hands up. I'd be interested to know where that's coming from.
So, Fliss, as far as you're concerned, towing a 7-ton train weight, so which is what anybody who passes their car test can now do since December 21, is perfectly legal in France, all over Europe, and in Northern Ireland.
As far as it's saying on the Gov website, yes. We were gifted it, okay, I hate to say this, but you are old enough, Matt, that we were gifted this license, okay, and we were allowed to just go and drive in Europe. Whether you've already had the license or you've been gifted it, there may not be a test, there may not be you have to do this, but training really does help. A bit of training, a bit of knowledge, a bit of awareness will change your behaviour, it will change your attitude, it will keep you and your family safer on the road. And if you go with any of the big reputable clubs or even me for training, there's often things like discounts on insurance because you've done a training course. You've reduced your risk to your insurance company. And so they will reward you with a discount.
So that's Fliss, the trailer lady. She's fully qualified to make a comment, isn't she, Matt?
Yeah, she's a qualified driving instructor and does driver training on towing caravans and driving a motorhome close to her own home area, the east of England, and attends loads of the shows and runs the training at the NEC show in Birmingham as well for the Camden Caravan Club. So, yeah, she's the lady in the know. And as she said, she spent an hour on the phone to DVLA and actually spoke to a human and they wouldn't give her an opinion. So it's interesting to see what she says. There's nothing actually written down to say you can't. Therefore, does it mean you can?
Well, we aren't sure. So do you know? Are you an expert in this? If you are, please get in touch. How do people do that then, Matt?
Very easily. Go to mhmp.info/askmatt. You can fill in the form or you can actually record your comment there on the little orange button. We'd love it if you did. Tell us where you are in the country if you do that as well. It's great to know where you are, isn't it?
We need the information and the clarification.
Information and clarification. Yes. Yeah, very good. It's a bit of a confusing one. You know, we're a bunch of people that love a rule and being on the right side of it.
It's a British thing.
Is it?
Yes, okay. Yes. If you go to somewhere like Italy or France, they've got the rules, but they just ignore them.
Just don't care. Yeah, so we want to know, can we do this? So it's created a bit of fear in a number of groups I've seen mentioned on Facebook that you can't tow this big caravan in France. Now, my thought is, well, actually, you know what? I can do it in the UK, therefore I can do it in Europe. So it doesn't say I can't unless you tell us otherwise. So please let us know.
Yeah, if in your experience, have you been stopped when in France and have you been penalised? We'd like to know. You're the expert. Also in the news today, Edmund King, he of the AA, I believe he's the president, isn't he?
He is the president, the lovely Edmund King, yeah.
President. That's not his job title, the lovely Edmund King, by the way. That's
it
not
should
on,
be. Should be.
Not on his business card. I don't think. Yeah. Edmund King has been appointed co-chair of the new EV, Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Forum, by Secretaries of State for Transport and Energy Security and Net Zero.
Punchy.
Yeah, it is punchy. Could this be one of the quangos that the government was going to have a bonfire of a few years ago? Was it quasi? Something governmental organisation. Yeah, yeah. They say on behalf of consumers, this EV infrastructure forum will be pushing for an efficient, affordable, accessible charging infrastructure across the UK. Details of membership have not yet been determined. I have got one question. It's a bit late, isn't it?
Well, it's Edmund to the rescue. Do you know what? He's Edmund V. King, which is EV King. Perfect.
Made for the job.
Couldn't be a better person for it. So we'll see what developments come there. EV infrastructure. Yeah, well, I think the first thing to do is get your spade out and start creating one, isn't it, really? Start putting more chargers about. Anyway, maybe you're an EV driver who loves the EV infrastructure where you go in your car. Let us know. It's a constant debate here on the podcast, isn't it?
It is. And by the way, if you're listening, Sir Edmund, is he a sir yet?
No, not yet. If you're listening, not yet.
If you're listening, Sir Edmund, lampposts. Put them in the lampposts. That's the obvious thing.
Yeah, that's easier said than done, though, because lampposts are fairly low voltage, aren't they?
Well, they are at the moment, but you could always run more wires because there must be wires going to them through trunking.
There's tons of innovation coming. Pavement slabs with sockets in and pre-cabled and stuff. It's all going to happen if we end up going down an EV route.
There's How about a solar panel sombrero? You just plug yourself into your car.
Yeah, thank goodness they didn't appoint you.
Yeah, I could have done with the cash, though, I must admit. Well, OK, we're leaving it up to you in your forum, Sir Edmund, and please keep us updated. We'd be very interested to know.
I'm sure we can get Edmund back on the podcast. He's a friend of the podcast, so I'm sure we can get an update with him at some point in the future. Let's let him get his feet under the table first.
It's the Motorhome Matt podcast. I'm Keith Gooden.
And I'm Motorhome Matt.
And it's brought to you by thatleisureshop.com. Okay, campsites are starting to charge for electricity. Now, I thought they did. I thought you went to a campsite, you got your pitch and you plugged in and you were being charged for it. What's changed?
Well, it's often perceived that electric is free because you've already paid for it. But the change is a pay-as-you-go meter. So you pay a fee for your pitch and then you get a little white RFID card, a little white credit card that you tap or some form of paying for the electric you use, and on top of your pitch fee, which means the person in a tent who only wants to charge their phone is paying the same pitch fee as the person in a massive motorhome with electric heaters, electric induction hob and everything else. So they're paying a different amount based on their consumption. And what I'm seeing, more and more campsites going this route simply because the costs of electricity have been unbearable.
Just a little bit of background about this. You might recall a couple of years ago when Putin invaded Ukraine.
Who?
Putin. He invaded Ukraine, and the EU and others, not so much Great Britain, by the way, the UK, they were buying gas and electricity from Russia at pretty good prices. When he saw the sanctions being levelled against Russia, what he did was to turn off the taps and switch off the switch. It meant that electricity here, as you know, doubled. It's a little bit better now, but that is the background. So I suppose people were turning up at campsites, weren't they, and parking on their pitch, and you could chuck the electricity in with it. But once the price doubled, there goes your profit margin.
Absolutely, yeah. The meter was spinning itself off the wall. So that prompted lots of campsites to go, hang on a minute, this doesn't work. And more I've seen have introduced this pay-as-you-go system, which, of course, carries a significant cost. And I think it's going to be something we're going to see a lot more campsites doing over the course of this year and next year. And even though electric is coming back down in price, I still think it's a fair way of doing it because, you know, that person on one pitch in a tent who only wants to charge their iPhone, it's not fair that they're paying the same as the person next to them on the next pitch in a great big motorhome with an induction hob, electric heaters, underfloor heating, all running on electric. It's just not fair, is it? So we should pay for what we use. I think it's fair. I went to a local campsite to us in Cheddar in North Somerset, Petruth Paddocks, and we spoke with Jules, and we've been there before. You remember we did a recent episode on camping with kids, and my 15-year-old went off to Petruth Paddocks on his own with his mates, no parents, and I thought that was a fantastic thing to let the children do. So we went back and saw Jules again, and we asked him a little bit more about what he's done on his campsite.
Okay, so we were faced a year or so ago, like everybody, with a huge rise in the kilowatt-hour charges by our supplier. We were going to go from 15p per unit to just under a pound. That was going to take our annual bill from 20,000 a year to £135,000. Maybe sit up and investigate. And as best I could, it was a bit of a wild west out there, to be honest, in terms of what was going on. It was a time you'll remember when prices were going up and down and no one really knew what was going on. So we had to try and trap them somewhere and get a contract for 3 years, which we managed to do at 37p a unit. So still more than double what we were paying before. So our bill was going to go up to somewhere approaching £45,000 in all if we continued to use the same amount of power that we were using previous years.
So that prompted you to look at investing in chargeable power points, so hookup points. Where did you start that process?
Did a lot of research online. There's a lot of campsite owner forums and talked to various different people. We looked at all sorts of technology. We went with what we felt was a safe technology in the end, a proven technology. There's a lot of more funky stuff out there, but we thought this is really important to get right. There's a fair bit of admin around what we do with it in terms of processing the cards and giving people cards and managing the system, but it works really, really well. We really feel we've made the right decision for us. We've got a good way of operating it now, and in a fair way, customers find it fair, which is the biggest thing for us. We haven't had anyone really complain about it.
So just talking a bit about the system then, what's it actually cost to install? You've got 70 hookup points here where the customer comes along and taps a card. How much did it cost to put in?
Yeah, so it was a mixture of replacing all of our non-meter boxes with metered boxes with RFID monitors on. These are things where you tap the screen rather than insert a card. That's the only difference. Some rewiring, just different pitches we were doing at the time. Overall, about £30,000 to put in 70 points across our 35 acres.
And what kind of timescale will you recoup that investment, do you think?
It's a difficult one. We think minimum 3 years, maybe five, but 3 to 5 years.
Okay. For a camper coming to the site, let's talk about their experience. They arrive and you've done something rather clever with an initial payment for electricity. Tell me more.
That's right. So when they arrive, they'll pay a pitch fee. That, in fact, is a reduced pitch fee from what it was. So we've dropped our pitch fee prices, but that was right to do. Our pitch fees are per person, not per unit. So the individual will have paid an amount of money, I think it's £18 for a grass-powered pitch, and that power is available to them. But if they want to actually use that power, they automatically, when they're through the booking process, have £3 added to their overall booking charge, so that when they arrive here, they can go straight to their pitch, via reception, straight to their pitch, have power, then come back later in the day and top it off if they want to. And typically, people are spending £3 to £4 per night on power. So we're giving them effectively, included in the price, their first night power included.
And the reason you've done this is to kind of ease the flow at reception on check-in, isn't it?
Yeah, what we found when we didn't do that, when people were having to do that on arrival, was it was an amount of admin that was best dealt with outside of arrival time rather than within it, and was just causing a little bit more stress and delays for people to get to their pitch. When people arrive, they want to get to their pitch, so let's not put anything in the way. Let them get to a pitch and there's power there, and sort it out later on once they've had a glass of wine or two and can wander over when reception's less busy.
So they come back to reception. Now, you've got about 1,500 people here at any one night. It means this is a bigger population than the local village of Cheddar.
Pretty much, yeah, it is. It's rivaling that. And out of our overall pitches, about a quarter of them are powered pitches. So it's a fair number still. It's 70-odd pitches to manage. But yeah, we got used to it. And this system is based on giving people a card that has an amount of money on it that they would have paid us. So let's say it's £10. That's loaded onto this card. They then go from reception to their power post next to their tent or their camper van, tap it on the screen, and that amount of money, that £10, shows in the screen. So they can check at any time during their stay how they're using their power. And it's been a surprise for a lot of people as well in terms of the amount of power that's consumed for heating devices. Mm. Especially this time of year, we've seen people use 3 or 4 times as much as they expected because they've got a heater on. So we brief them. We say, if you're going to use an electric heater, it is going to use an awful lot of electricity. Think about it. Maybe get a diesel heater. Maybe use a gas heater or use your electric heater carefully because it will chew through electric.
So are you finding that a byproduct of this then is that you're actually educating your guests here on their own power consumption?
Very much so, yes. Mm. We've seen a drop by at least a third in our overall usage on site of power. And that's primarily because people now are thinking about their power. People before would heat their awnings whilst they're out for the day, genuinely would. They'd have a big motorhome maybe with heated flooring on, not realise they left it on. Mm. Lots of switches and things that they could turn down and they weren't aware of these things. The motorhomes are quite complicated and for new people, new owners especially, it's a journey of discovery, finding out what's taking power. And we help them with that advice early on and they approach it with caution rather than naivety.
So what happens if they've not used the power they've paid you for because they're prepaying for it?
Yeah, they get a refund if they come to reception, and if they want a refund, usually it's less than £1, and a lot of people don't bother about it. But if for whatever reason there's an excess on there and it's an amount of money that means something to them, then we'll happily refund the difference of what they have spent on power versus what they actually paid us.
And do you think we're going to see more and more campsites embarking on this investment?
Absolutely. No, it's the only way to go. It's a fair way to go. And why should someone who just charge on our iPhone using 50p be charged an amount of money that enables us to recover the person using £15? No, it should be equal. And people have come to us and said, we really like the open, honest, transparent way you're doing this, which is the way forward, I think, for everybody.
I've joked that, you know, the meter was spinning itself off the wall as people are outside on the campsite recharging their electric car on their hookup point, which is true. People are doing it. We're going to see more and more of that as more and more EVs can tow caravans. One day we'll see electric motorhomes, electric camper vans are starting to appear. But how are you going to respond to that? Are EV charge points something you're looking at?
Yeah, we're about to install, I think, 6 EV charge points. They're a bit of an overnight charging because people effectively are got the cars here. There's no need for fast charging as far as we're concerned. We're backing that up by putting in a solar installation as well. And that solar installation should take care of about a third of our overall use of power, including the EV charge points. That's the purpose of it. Some big numbers. It's going to be something like £50,000-£60,000 to install what we need to install, and it's going to take 5 years to recover it. But we just think now's the time to do that, and it's the right thing to do for all sorts of reasons.
And how much of that energy consumption would your solar supply power for?
Out of our overall use, about a third of it will be taken up by solar, two-thirds by main grid at the moment. That may change in the future. That's the current plan. And money these days costs an awful lot more to borrow than it did even a few years ago. And products cost a whole lot more than they did as well. So it's strike while the iron's hot as far as we're concerned. It's get in there, just get on and do it. And everything we generate from the site here goes back into it. And you've seen a site generate over 22 years. The site's a very different site to the one we started with, but it still keeps the same non-commercialized feel. Everything we do is checked. Is this going to change the look and feel of the place? If it is, we don't do it. It's simple as that.
That's Jules Sayer. He's the owner at Petruth Paddocks in North Somerset. Cheddar, where the cheese comes from.
It is.
Now, we predict more campsites will do pay-as-you-go electricity. And you made the point, actually, we've seen the peak in electricity prices, haven't we? They are beginning to come down. I think they're 25% less than they were a couple of years ago. But you think more campsites are going to go pay-as-you-go? Why?
So. Because I think it's a fairer way to do it. It's fairer for the campsite. It's actually fairer for us, the consumer, so the camper, and we pay for what we need. But what I thought I'd do is go behind the scenes and speak to the company that actually installed the system on Petruth Paddocks, and they are installing systems across the country. They're called CPES, and I spoke to its owner, Ted Waring, and I asked Ted, is your phone ringing off the hook?
We've seen an increasing level of interest in the metering system because it offers a fair way of charging for electricity. Whether you're a single occupant of a motorhome or touring caravan, or you're a family of four, if you consume more electricity, you're going to pay for what you consume based on that. So it's fair, it's transparent, and it's very easy to use from both the park operator's point of view and the holidaymaker's point of view.
That's true, but it's a significant investment for a campsite. Often they're a small family business, Ted. Is that a barrier to entry for a campsite operator to invest in this?
It's not too much of a barrier when you compare it to what the alternative is. And the alternative is, if you've got age-old metering systems in place in your existing park anyway, the fact that those existing meters may not be recording correct consumption. Some of them are open to abuse as well, because if it's an alternative card-based system, these cards are available to buy by anyone on the internet. So we've seen the uptake from small CL sites to touring parks with 200, 300 pitches. And it's an ever-increasing demand for the system.
So you think this is something we're going to see a lot more of in the coming years?
I think it's something we will see a lot more of. And I think it's the transparency of it and the way it's a reflection on what you as a consumer want to pay for. I think it's going to be an ever-increasing demand.
Brilliant. Well, that's good news for you, Ted, as the man that installs it and sells it.
We supply it for others to install. You know, it's quite easy.
Where can a campsite operator find out more about your business, Ted? Because I know we have lots of campsite owners listening to this.
Yeah, well, they can find out more by visiting our website, which is cpes.co.uk. We have a number of trade events that we attend around the year as well, which most of the park operators attend, or simply just pick the phone up and have a chat. We've got information we can supply first on the system and how it can benefit you as a park operator. and, you know, will willingly supply, will willingly talk to you and give you recommendations from parks that have already installed it.
Ted Waring is the sales director at CPES, that's Caravan Park Electrical Services. So he's supplying the black boxes, which means that we park on the pitch, pay the pitch price, and that's not easy to say, and then pay extra for our electricity. I mean, whatever way you cut it, if it's the Green Revolution, we're paying more, aren't we? More money.
It could be if the campsite don't drop the pitch fee, and the cynics will say, well, that's what's going to happen. But it's interesting, Jules has dropped his pitch fees, so he's now cheaper than he used to be because the electric is on top. The great thing about this, though, is it makes us more mindful about how much electricity we're using. I was chatting to a campsite just the other week, and they are near Birmingham. And, of course, Crufts was on the other week, wasn't it? And they say their campsite electricity bill is through the roof when Crufts on, because loads of the dog owners leave the heater on in the awning of the caravan. So when they come back, the dog's got a lovely warm environment to sleep in. So the awning is heated, and they're leaving it on all day. Well, that's burning electric all day long, wherever it's come from. So I think charging for it will make people more mindful of this. And you don't need to leave a heater in your awning on all day. So this caravan park was looking at introducing this system because of their electricity bill. It's just too high. So it will make us more mindful and more conscious about how much energy we're consuming.
Let me play devil's advocate for a moment here, because most people don't want to waste electricity or gas or any other form of power. They want to do their bit. But every time we take a step forward in the green revolution, it's costing me more money. It's the consumer that's being hit with either the tax or the profit stick.
True. Yeah, it's true.
You know, we are, I think, getting a bit tired of it, aren't we?
Yeah, we have to take responsibility for it. I agree with you, Keith, and I'm not going to defend it, but we do have to take responsibility for what we consume and how we consume it. And it's interesting, Jules is investing more money for solar, which ultimately means his electric is going to come from the sun. And that's going to be a great business model for him down the line, because the electric is going to be essentially free once those panels are paid for. So commercially for him, maybe he'll drop the fees lower once that's all installed. I don't know.
You did say in a Q&A, I think the last podcast or the one before, that in response to somebody's question, about extras in motorhomes when you're buying a motorhome, you know, if they say, yeah, here's extra, here, we'll give you 25% off the solar installation. And you did say, well, if you're plugging in, you don't need solar. It's a cost that you don't need. But actually, looking at this now, if you've got a bit of solar where you can generate your own power, you don't have to plug in to the metered system on the campsite, on your pitch.
True.
And you can generate your own electricity for free. And of course, once you've generated that electricity back for the cost of the solar installation, it's all completely free.
Yeah, but that's a lot of nights on a campsite solar panel, isn't it? You're talking about £5-10 a night if you're running your electric, you know, at a reasonable rate all night. That's quite a few nights before you've paid for a solar panel. And I would just want the convenience of being able to pay for electric on site. On our motorhome, there's not much room for a big solar panel. We've been looking at fitting one on it. There isn't a huge amount of space. It's an Adria Twin. There's limited space to have a reasonable solar array on the roof. And so we haven't got one at the moment, but it's something we're thinking about and talking about. But actually, it's not a huge cost. You know, you're saying the consumer's going to pay for it. In the scheme of spending £50,000 or £100,000 on a motorhome, it's not a massive cost. I think it's a change of behaviour. And yes, we do have to pay for it, but I think we just do have to accept that.
As ever, we want to hear your views on this. Please get in touch with us. What should people do to get in touch?
Really easy. Go to mhmp.info/askmatt. We'd love it if you hit the little button and recorded your question. And please tell us where you are in the country. It's great to have your voice on the podcast. But if you're not brave enough, you can fill in a form and submit it that way.
Welcome to the Motorhome Matt podcast. I'm Keith Gooden.
And I'm Motorhome Matt.
And it's brought to you by thatleisureshop.com. Our Q&A question and answers this week is slightly different. You might recall a couple of podcasts ago that Matt talked about his, it was literally a brush with death, wasn't it, Matt?
It was.
Just recap.
Well, I've been suffering for the last 3 or 4 months with a bit of chest ache. It's not really pain. And this terrible cough, which like we just put down to a post-pneumonia cough. And I'd been going to the doctor, had two ECGs, which had come back normal, two chest x-rays, which had also come back normal, but I knew something was wrong. So I went back to the doctor, trying to chase the final results of a blood test, trying to get rid of the cough, which I've still got. And he listened and said, I'm not really very happy about this, Matt. Bear with me a minute. Came back, said, right, I've checked you into A&E. You're being taken there today in an ambulance unless you've got somebody that can take you. And off I went. So off to A&E, Jude dropped me in that night, checked into cardiology. And within 20 hours, I was in theatre and had two stents fitted.
Stents are the little things that they blow up, not explode, inflate.
Well, the ones I've got inflate and dissolve after 90 days.
To open up the artery or the vein. So basically, Matt's heart was being starved of oxygen. And one of the doctors did actually say it's a good thing that you came to see us when you did, didn't he?
Well, it was a surgeon doing the procedure. I'm led there and he said, blimey, it's not a good sight in here. He said, I'm going to fix it for you now. You're lucky to have made it this far.
He has made it this far. Thank heavens for that. So we've had a lot of response from you about that podcast and about Matt. At Ace Airstream has messages to say, I can empathise. I had a cough and feeling increasingly tired through December, initially diagnosed as heartburn cough, but the medication made no difference. Eventually referred for x-rays and an ECG, and very fortunately I got a cancellation when they hooked me up for the ECG. They said, you're going nowhere. We are admitting you. Proved to be atrial fibrillation and a high heart rate. 6 nights in hospital and a concoction of medication later, they let me out, and fingers crossed, I'm on the road to recovery, feeling generally better. Keep spreading the health gospel. Sounds like we're both lucky. Take care, says at Ace Airstream. Thanks very much for that.
Well done. Thanks for sharing that. Do you know what? The number of people that spoke to me at the recent Yorkshire Motorhome Campervan show who are also welcome to the Stent Club. I didn't even know it was a thing. I'm in the club, and the number of men who were my age or older who had been through something like this and were all had this ignited passion for men's awareness of health. And they all agreed, as blokes, we just don't talk about it. So, yeah, I've got the same passion. So, please, take note of any condition you might have and get it checked.
And FX Women as well, don't forget that.
Of course.
At Andrew Kingu 7 has got something to say, Matt.
Yeah, he says, glad it's sorted. I had the same last year, a stent fitted. It is scary, but it's our second chance of a few more years to enjoy life. Hopefully a few more than a few, Andrew. I've done the same with openly speaking to friends and family about looking after themselves. Matt, start those changes. A year on, I feel healthier than ever. From your avid listener, P.S., thanks for the shout out with my mate Pete from Cardiff at the NEC show. He's now on the lookout for a van. So this is the chap that came up to me and I interviewed him and he said, I'm not interested in a motorhome. I said, why are you here? He said, my in-laws are here. I've just come along. And now he's looking for a van. Peter, we are going to convince you. I'll wait to hear what you buy.
We've converted you.
Hopefully. And Andrew, thanks for mentioning that. Thanks for commenting on YouTube. Really appreciate it.
John at Katie Jackson 8862 said, I had a stent fitted 26 years ago, so I know exactly what you've been through. That was after 3 heart attacks. Wow. I'm 71 now and all is good. So thanks to the NHS. Absolutely. Mm. Stay well, Matt, and life will be so much better from now on.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the encouragement. I'll tell you what, the side effects of the medication are my challenge at the minute. They are annoying, to say the least. I had a weird experience in Harrogate on the Friday. I gave a talk, as I did every day at the show, and I wasn't nervous. In fact, I was excited to be giving this talk on going to Europe in a motorhome. And I stood there and thought, wow, the nervous energy will kick in a minute and we can go up a gear. And it didn't. I didn't generate any adrenaline because I can't. And I'm on all these beta blockers and blood thinners that stop it happening. So it was. I had to dig deep. It was a bit of a shock. Came off stage with a very red face and everyone was very concerned. I was fine, but just very tired.
So. And what about the flatulence?
Yeah, that's still there, I'm afraid.
Side effects. Lat1419 has been in touch. Not just men, women are underdiagnosed with heart disease. I too had the long cough and a much longer story to get to a diagnosis of heart failure. Initially, I had an echocardiogram, which diagnosed the heart failure with a prognosis of less than 12 months to live, with a 12-month wait to see a cardiologist and 8 months to get the scans needed to determine what was causing the failure. So I went private to get this reduced to 3 months, and sadly, I no longer now have a motorhome budget.
Oh, what a blow. What a blow. But thank goodness you're still here to tell the tale. You know, my GP said to me, the one that referred me, you might want to consider going private, Matt, to get this diagnosed. He said, I don't endorse private medicine. I don't engage with it myself. He said, something you might need to do. Anyway, the conversation escalated and he managed to book me in. I actually said to the surgeon when he was operating on me, he's in my arm, you know, with his little pipe going up my arm and into my heart. And I said to him, I was given a referral for an appointment here for this procedure, 117-week lead time, over 2 years. He said, you'd have not made that. So, yeah, I feel your pain, literally, and I'm very grateful to that GP, who I still intend to speak to say thank you, because he's been away on holiday and I can't get through to him. But I will say thank you to him, because it's down to his insight and foresight that I managed to get into that theatre the following day and have this done. So I'm here to tell the tale. Whee!
And you shouldn't have to pay extra because we can't get access to our great NHS for a variety of reasons, whatever those reasons are. We here at the Motorhome Matt podcast support the NHS because...
Absolutely.
They've kept Matt alive.
They did. What a team at the Bristol Heart Institute. Just amazing. I will never forget that experience of being in that theatre with this really upbeat, jovial bunch of people that absolutely loved what they were doing. And yeah, what a team. Magnificent. In fact, the whole department were amazing.
Now, if you want to get a comment on the air, maybe it's about this episode or something you've heard in the past, or you just want to say hi, what should people do?
Yeah, you can do lots of things. You can comment on our YouTube channel. We would love that if you're watching it. Please leave a comment. I do try and respond to them all as quickly as I can, or leave a question at mhmp.info/askmatt. Do hit the button and record your voice. It's so easy to do. You can listen to it back before you press submit. Or if you'd rather just fill out the form, you can do that there as well. It's mhmp.info/askmatt.
MHMP Motorhome Matt podcast. Get it?
Motorhome Mott?
Mott the Hoople.
Like Putin.
Yeah. You can also share this episode with a friend, can't you, Matt?
You can if you've got any. Have you got any friends yet, Keith?
Yes, of course, yeah. But unfortunately, I haven't been keeping up with the payments, so a couple of them have drifted away.
All right, and given your comments about the newly elected Russian leader, there could be a knock on the door for you in a minute.
It's all right, I've given him your address.
Thanks for listening to the Motorhome Matt podcast. Remember to check back here for more episodes full of hints and tips and helpful advice. We'll see you soon for another Motorhome Matt podcast, brought to you with thatleisureshop.com.